You're listening to Real Public Radio News, produced at KBFR 95.3 FM in Boulder. This is ZT interviewing Art Good Times.
So, just to set things up a little bit, you're the county commissioner for San Miguel County, right?
Yep.
And you...
I represent the West End District, which is Norwood, Placerville, and the surrounding mesas.
Okay.
Each commissioner represents the district. They have to live in the district, and they're elected countywide.
Okay. And at one time I heard you had the, what was it, the highest elected position of any Green in the United States. Was that right?
Well, they aren't exactly comparable. Right now I think Matt Gonzalez, who's a supervisor, it's a comparable position to the city and county of San Francisco. He's probably the highest ranking member, but I'm probably the highest ranking member in the Inner Basin West here. Yeah.
Okay. So first off, I wanted to ask you a little bit about I guess Green Party history. I guess that it started out there was two Green parties, right? And I guess there still is. And I was wondering if you could sort of explain that to me, because I never quite figured it out.
I know it's confusing to lots of people. The Green Party didn't start out as a party. It started out as an organization. Green. There were these. They called them circles of correspondence, and there were people that were very interested in trying to see if we could have a more comprehensive approach to alternative issues, rather than simply trying to lobby the Dems to kind of move in a direction that they don't seem to be wanting to go anyway. But people felt like they wanted to organize together, so. There's this organization, this Green Party of the United States of America, GPUSA, and it was a membership organization, and like you could write to them in their offices, wherever they were located, and just to say, I want to be a member, and you yourself become a member. So there, it's a membership organization, and they were interested, not so much, although some, in electoral politics, but they also were interested in organizing and being advocates for what they call the 10 key values, which has sort of become the 10 commandments of the Green politics.
Okay, and then later that formed into the Association of State Green Parties, or?
Well, what happened is I think there was some disagreement, you know, over the years. I remember watching the Greens when they first organized. I was a Dem involved in the Democratic Party and a representative here in my county, going to Democratic functions and stuff on the Central Committee here in the county. And I looked at the Greens, but they pretty much were a debating society. Quite frankly, there wasn't a whole lot of electoral action. In fact, it's only been the last two or three years that we've seen, you know, a couple dozen people elected around the country from the Green Party. And now we're up to almost 200 people who hold office. But like I say, this organization, the GPUSA organization, was kind of a top-down organization. You know, they had this committee at the top, and anybody could be a member, and so it wasn't really structured like a real party. Some of the individual state parties were uncomfortable with that process. The way we're organized in this state, we have chapters in each of our communities. Like here in San Miguel County, we have a chapter of the Green Party, and we have local meetings, and we have local issues, and we run local candidates. We just ran, unfortunately, unsuccessfully, a candidate for county clerk here in San Miguel County. They got about 30% of the vote, but they didn't win. So we have these local chapters, and then the local chapters all get together for a state organization. So we have a state Green Party, the Green Party of Colorado, and they have state meetings, and it's a regular ballot access party in Colorado, thanks to the laws. And each state is different, which makes it very confusing, so having a national party, because in Colorado, we have ballot access, and we are considered a minor party with very minimal requirements. In some states, it's very, very onerous. You need 10 or 20% of some statewide election to get party status. So it varies from state to state. But what happened is all of these organizations, state parties that were organized on this chapter state party kind of model, got together and formed the Association of Green State of State Green Parties. ASGP. And ASGP then decided they wanted to become a national party modeled on this grassroots bottom-up structure. And so after nominating convention for Nader, which was really ASGP, and after the Nader run, they filed with the Federal Election Commission to become a national party. And so now we have a national party, the Green Party of the United States, and then we have this green organization that is sort of an electoral, somewhat, but mostly organized along membership. It's called the Green Party of the United States of America, GPUSA. But quite frankly, most of the members are sort of crossover people, and really it's the party organization that's probably the most active and the one that's growing most significantly right now.
Okay. And just to be clear, that was after Nader's run in 2000, or was that after his run in 1996?
In 2000, in 1996, he ran, it was sort of a half run, and yeah. In fact, a lot of people were concerned because it wasn't a full-on run. This time, it was much more of a run, but again, there was some concern in the party that he himself is not a Green, and the Greens need to organize along a real party model, and I think that, you know, we're probably going to work more in the model of most of the other parties having a candidate who actually comes from the ranks.
So what do you think is in the work for the 2004 elections as far as presidential candidate goes?
Well, it's a mixed bag. A lot of the Greens have been talking about people like maybe there's a whole group that would like to see Nader run again, thinks he would have a much better chance and would be much more poised to do better. There's other people that like myself, who think that if we're going to run a candidate, he has to be a Green, or she has to be a Green.
Right.
And I think Cynthia McKinney, the congresswoman who was kicked out of the elections by Republicans who crossed over in the primary out in Georgia, I think she's been bandied about as a possible candidate. There's another group of us, and I guess I'm in this sort of small group, that feels like we shouldn't really run our own candidate, particularly in 2004. I think a lot of us feel that the war is such a huge issue that we need to form coalitions to defeat Bush and really focus on our grassroots development. You know, we have, like I say, about 200 elected officials around the country, but we're talking about 100,000 elected offices that we should be vying for. And so some of us feel that we need to do our homework first before we try to attack the national level for publicity, which is really what you run as an educational campaign on the national level, rather than do that and risk the possibility of being a spoiler again, we ought to be collaborative with our progressive friends, defeat the Bush administration, and try to work on getting a lot of people elected at the local and state level. So there's various different strategies that are being talked about right now.
So what can people do if they if they want to influence the decision of the Greens on who they run or who they nominate or what their electoral strategy is?
Well, it's a very grassroots organization, and what's really exciting about the Greens is that you can have an influence just by going to your local meeting, getting involved with your local chapter. We have 12 chapters right now in Colorado. We have 6 on the Western Slope and 6 on the Front Range. So whether you're in the metro areas or whether you're out in the country, there is an opportunity to get together with a local group and kind of see what proposals you'd like to see happen. The way proposals come before the national party, and I'm a state representative from Colorado, one of two, to the National Coordinating Council for the national party, the way proposals come to the national party is they start at a chapter, the chapter takes it to the state passes it, takes it to the national. So if you really want to influence what the Greens do or don't do, I'd really recommend getting involved on the local chapter level, trying to make a proposal about what you think ought to happen, and then bringing it to the state and then taking it to the national.
Would there still be time to do something like that before the election?
Oh, there's lots of time right now. You know, we're very much in the exploratory phase. You know, even the Democrats don't have set candidates yet. The way the process works on a national level is we'll have a nominating convention, probably like we did last time in 2000, and that'll probably be in the year 2004, so it's a year and a half away probably, and there won't be anything decided until then. So there's lots of time to make proposals right now.
Okay. So what do you think is the best strategy for the Green Party to grow? You talked in the beginning about supporting local elections more than national kind of educational elections. What other ideas do you have about getting people more organized and getting people more educated?
Well, you know, the reality of it is people don't get involved in party politics that much. I mean, how many people do you know that are dedicated Democrats that go to Democratic Central Committee meetings? I'm sure only a handful in your community. What we have is people who are really dedicated, really interested in politics, get involved in the party itself. But I think where the metal really hits the road is when we have people running for offices. And we've had people like myself who started out as a Democrat and changed to the Green Party and then ran as a Green and was able to do really well in my second term election as a Green Party candidate. I think we need to get people to run for local offices, and I mean really local, school board offices, open space commissions, environmental commissions, all the local things that are going on in your community, town councils. If we start getting people on those offices, and if they start running campaigns that are visible in the community, I think that's the best way for us to grow. Now, I know a lot of my party friends, colleagues, disagree. They feel like we need the national exposure that Nader gave us. And I will admit that Nader's run in 2000 did a great job of alerting people to the possibility of an alternative party in the United States politics. So I think there was a lot that was gained from Nader's run. At the same time, I think there were significant downsides to Nader's run. We can talk, and a lot of Greens don't agree with me that there was a spoiler effect at all, but I think many progressives feel, across the political spectrum, feel that it's inherent in a winner-take-all system that a minor party is going to draw votes away from the major parties. And there are two ways to deal with that. One would be to do what they call IRV, voting, which is sort of like doing a runoff election before rather than doing a runoff election afterwards. It works in that you take two or three choices for one office and you rate them, your highest priority, your second, your third. If the highest priority person doesn't get enough minimum votes, then they just erase that one and they take your second choice. If that second choice doesn't get close to votes, then you take your third choice. And so it would allow people to vote for a minor party candidate as their top choice and then a major party candidate as their alternate choice. If we did that up front, and that's done in Australia and a number of other countries, it would be a great way to give people an opportunity to vote their conscience and at the same time not have that spoiler effect. But because of the spoiler effect, some of us feel it would be better for the party in 2004 to focus on building a real grassroots movement in the United States with the Green Party, and to try and see if we can't change the direction away from the war economy that the Republican administration currently seems to be employing.
Do you really see things being a lot different if there was a Democrat in the White House?
I think things would be different. I think it's I'm a dissident Green on this one, so I don't think I'm probably representative of the Green Party. This is just Art Goodtime speaking, but as an elected Green official, one of the 200 in the country, I think there's a significant difference between the Democratic policies and the Republican policies in this country. And I think we see it most on people who are the poorest, the people who are out in the street, the homeless. The change in administration has made life way tougher for lots of our poorest segment of the population. And it's also changed the way we deal with our allies and our enemies on the international level. So to say there's no difference, I think, is overstating the case. For progressive people who are actively working right now to try and save ANWR from development, it's critical that somebody gets elected this time to change the way things are going. I don't think the progressives in the country can wait, 10, 15 years until some Green Party candidate is a viable candidate for winning. So because of that, I think we in the United States have to be a little cleverer than maybe other parties in how we grow. And that's why I think some of us are advocating, and I think Ronnie Duggar has done on the national level in The Nation magazine, advocating that we go slow and maybe have a state-run presidential candidates. In other words, each state would choose their own slate of presidential candidate and they would run in that state. But on the national level, we would leave it open, and that would allow coalitions to form between progressives.
Huh. Yeah, it sounds a... Oh, you were going to say something?
Yeah, and again, that isn't because we feel like we can help save the Democratic Party. I quite frankly, having been involved, don't see much hope right now for saving the party. But what I do see hope for is growing the Green Party to be a viable alternative. But when we ask progressives to vote for Green Party national candidates, knowing that they have no chance of winning, we're asking them to take a significant leap into the future, and we're asking them to vote against their own interests on the immediate level. And I think that's a bad choice to make people do. I would much rather let them vote on the national level however way they want to go, but I want them to vote on the local and state levels for the Greens to get us growing and so that we can eventually take on a national challenge.
Yeah, I think that might be good for a number of reasons. I think there's a lot of people who aren't very focused on state government. They're probably even a little bit more focused on local government than they are state government.
Right.
Yeah, so I can see that as being a pretty good idea. So I have to ask you though, how do you feel about how did you feel about Nader's run in 2000? Did you feel that he honestly spoiled the election, or did you feel that he just made it easier for Bush to steal, or do you feel that he didn't have as much of an effect as people thought he did?
Well, you know, it's a mixed bag. I had the privilege of introducing Ralph here on the Western Slope, speaking at the Western Colorado Congress, and I got to introduce him. And I think Ralph did a whole lot for growing the Green Party from an idea and an organization that really wasn't too focused to a real national organization with representation in almost all the states, not all yet, but almost all. Because of that, I think his on balance, it was a very valuable thing to have him run. He also, brings a level of rigor and intellectual acuity to that that candidacy that made people realize that, you know, this guy's probably a lot sharper than the other two candidates, even if they weren't going to vote for him. And that was helpful. I'm a great fan of Eric Erickson. I don't think things are good and bad, or good or bad. I think they're both and. And I think you have to look at the strengths and weaknesses. The strengths is he helped grow the party. He was a very viable candidate. He was he had great connections, and he raised $5 million for his own candidacy. All of those things were great pluses for Ralph. Some of the downside was, we didn't make the 5% that we hoped to. That would have given us some money to work with in this next election. Whatever you want to say, I don't think Ralph was the reason Gore lost, but I do think Ralph... took votes away from Gore, at least according to exit polls, about 30% of the Green votes probably would have gone to Gore from what we know from exit polls. So I imagine it would be hard not to say that if it wasn't for Ralph running in Florida and New Hampshire, it was likely Gore would have taken those two states. I think Gore had a lot of other problems, and the Democrats had a lot of other problems, including losing his own home state. So I don't think you can say the Greens were responsible for Bush's election. I do think there is a spoiler effect. I think it's inherent in the system as we structure it and the way we vote right now. And because of those drawbacks, I'm hoping that we can be a little smarter in our strategy. But again, I think Ralph did a lot of good things for the Green Party, as well as some things that can't hurt us in the future.
So what do you think it's going to take to make instant runoff voting happen in the United States? Is it a legislative process? Or
I think it would be probably most likely either a referendum or an initiative, a process that would push people to do it. I mean, the Democrats could realize that in order to obviate this spoiler effect, they could put this into practice if they were the party in power. They aren't right now, so I don't know if the Republicans have a great urgency. I mean, I think they have the same spoiler effect from libertarians and even from some of the Reform Party and Constitutional Party people. So I think the whole system would work better for everyone if people were willing to make that kind of change. But right now, I think what you're seeing is the major parties pretty much ignoring the minor parties and treating them as unimportant. And as long as they get 2 and 3% on the national level, I think they probably are unimportant. But I have a feeling, at least from what we've seen about the green movement around the world in the 70 other countries that have green parties, this is a movement that transcends just even our national boundaries, and there's a good chance that the Greens could become a significant influence. And if they do that, and the Democrats don't do something, there are going to be spoiled elections, and it's going to be kind of a mess for progressives to figure out how to go forward.
So why don't you talk to me a little bit about present issues that are a big concern to you? I know probably the biggest one on your mind is the war in Iraq. Can you tell me a little bit about how you feel about that and what you think we can do to avert war?
You bet. And again, the Greens, one of their peace and peaceful, nonviolent actions are part of our 10 key values. The major platform for the American Party, and along with grassroots democracy and environmental wisdom and a lot of those other issues, future focus, these things that seem pretty standard in terms of progressive ideas about how government and how politics ought to work. I think there is a definite issue about security. We all need to be secure in our lives, and I think the Green Party is supportive of a secure America. But I think when we go out and enunciate a doctrine that calls preemptive strikes as in our national interest, I think we are overreaching, and we are putting ourselves in a place that is not defensible, either morally, as the Pope has come out and said, or politically. I think we are risking a huge conflagration in the Middle East by proactively saying we're going into Iraq, which hasn't attacked us, and we're going to bomb the hell out of that country in order to prevent them from ever attacking us. If we allow the United States to carry on this kind of a preemptive strike policy, as we saw happen at the Balkans and now is being proposed in Iraq, I think we're ending up in a situation where a third world war is almost guaranteed. And so I think a lot of us, and I don't think it's just Greens, I think it's a lot of people in the country, are having big misgivings about this preemptive strike policy that the president has enunciated. And I think those of us who are politically active are trying to do everything we can to raise that concern and make sure that our elected leaders know that it's not acceptable to go forward and bomb people because we think they might hurt us.
So when you say a third world war, what are you particularly concerned about in the region? Is it mostly Israel and Palestine, or what makes you think it would blow up into something like that?
Well, the dangers are so great, given the fact that our world economy at this point in time is dependent upon oil, and the oil reserves are held by countries that are strongly religious and have a tradition that is pretty much anti-democratic, is almost despotic in terms of its political structures. If you look at most of our Arab neighbors or Arab allies in the Middle East who control so much of the oil, world oil, they are not democracies. And so we've aligned ourselves with an anti-democratic states that while there are allies right now, we really don't know how much they're on our side because their systems are so different than ours. I think we just run the risk, especially now with this two-front system. We Afghanistan, we're fighting a battle. We're doing a war on terrorism around the world. We're about ready to bomb Iraq, and we're threatening or at least trading barbs with North Korea. It seems to me that that's the recipe for more disasters. We know the Middle East is a match ready to ignite, and who knows exactly how that will come down and who will do what. But you know, when you look at what happened in World War One and Two, it didn't take much for the world to go to war stances because of some incidents that occurred. And I'm afraid that bombing Iraq could coalesce the Arab world into a united front against Western interests, and that could be very dangerous.
Definitely could be very dangerous. In terms of other things in the Middle East, what are your thoughts on some sort of resolution between the Israelis and the Palestinians?
But again, I'm not an expert. I'm a county commissioner in a local rural area, so I can give you my little take, but I don't pretend to have the knowledge to share with you. I will say, my heart goes out for both my Jewish and Palestinian friends, and on the horrible you know, world that's occurring right now in their lives. In some way, it's just heartbreaking that we were close to a peace settlement and now we're so far away. I wish the United States was taking a more active stance in trying to broker peace than it is right now trying to broker war.
So one of the other things I wanted to ask you, I'm sure out in a rural county, there's at least some amount of hunting and you know, people who use guns for sports and stuff like that. I was wondering if you could tell me what your position is on gun control and how you address that as county commissioner.
Well, you know, I have some, as a Green, I have some probably unusual and maybe not exactly PC attitudes towards rural life. For instance, one of the things I'm proudest of in my county is getting rid of building codes in half my county, because half my county is so rural as to have 100 people in 800 and 400 square miles, and we didn't really need regulation there. At the other end of the county, we have a thriving resort economy in Telluride, and we absolutely needed a building code. So I think the understanding that one size doesn't fit all in rural areas is really critical. I believe that I personally don't own a gun, but I believe every American should have the right to bear arms. I think it's part of our Constitution, part of our heritage, and part of our tradition. And I think it's a good part of our tradition in that it's a counterbalance, which I think our founding fathers were very concerned about, balancing state power with individual power, personal power, and private rights. And I think we, as a country, it scares me when all of the guns go into the hands of only the central administration, whatever that government may or may not be. So I'm all for allowing people to bear arms. That said, you know, in the cities, I think we need some control on some handguns. I think the best control on handguns ought to be anybody uses a gun and you go to jail, and you go to jail for quite some time. You know, right now we have a couple kids here in our community who got some Cremora out of the teacher's lounge and put a little sign saying, you know, enjoy your anthrax, and dropped it in the suggestion box at a local school.
Wow.
And they're facing a 5-year federal charge. 5-year prison term. And yet I know people who use guns all the time and get off on probation. I think it's crazy in our system, our judicial system, that we allow people who use guns in the committing of a crime, or even use guns or even possess guns in the process of a crime, not to bear some very, very heavy burdens and to spend a significant time in rehabilitation. But right now, our laws are such that you can spend more time in jail for robbing somebody without a gun than you can for using a gun. And it's crazy. So I think our best ways of controlling the proliferation of guns is to have some serious consequences for anybody who uses a gun in a commission of a crime, and then also at the same time to protect the right of private citizens to bear arms and not to have the federal government confiscate all arms in this country.
Huh, interesting. That definitely is a unique view for a Green, I'd say.
That's right. Yep.
So is there anything else that...
Let me say one thing. You know, we talk about, you know, a party is just that. It's an umbrella of which a lot of people come together who share certain values. I think a lot of the values on nonviolence is something I share. I was a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War, and I served 2 years of service to my country, but not in war, but in peacetime efforts. And I really believe in nonviolence, but at the same time, I'm not a pacifist in that if somebody tries to attack me, I would defend myself. And if they attack our country or my family, I would defend those. I think it's really important to understand that those of us who live in the rural areas live maybe two or three levels of difference between our urban colleagues. You know, when I want to go get water, I don't just turn on the faucet. I got to go start up the pump, get my well to work, make sure all the lines are secure, and then I get my water. And my water is only secure as long as I maintain that facility. The same getting my food. Sometimes I have to get my food in a lot more difficult than simply going to the store. Sometimes I harvest it myself, or I buy it at a farmer's market. I talk to the people who would grow it. There's a lot more involved, I think, in living in a rural area in terms of taking care of your own needs. Because of that, I think those of us in the rural area have a little different viewpoint about what's politically correct and incorrect. And so I think we always have to understand that the Green Party is going to have many differences But I think we're all going to share some basic values, and that's what makes us Greens.
That's good. I was wondering if there's anything else you'd like to speak about, you know, just anything that's on your mind that you'd like to get on the air, aside from, you know, the concerns about the war and everything else, anything else that you think is underpublicized?
The thing that's really outrageous in Colorado is the fact that if you have a private home, and if you live in most of the counties or cities in the state, you have to have your home inspected. They have to come out and check to make sure the electrical wiring is right, that the plumbing is right, that the building was built the right way and is designed the right way, and they usually make several inspections. However, if you build a public school in Colorado, you are not required to have one inspection. In fact, the reality is, all that school districts are required to have when they build a new school is a plan inspection. There's one plan inspector for the entire state. He doesn't make any physical inspections. So right now, you're a school district, you build a new school, there is no requirement that that school be inspected to make sure it's safe. Now, in our county, we have a school built just a couple years ago, and our county inspectors freely inspected the building just because the community wanted to have that inspection. They weren't required, but we did it for free. The county paid for it. We found 60 violations, 20 of them were structural, including rebar that fell over when our inspectors looked at it.
Wow.
This is a crime in Colorado that right now we do not have any way of ensuring that our public school buildings are safe buildings. That, to me, is an incredible oversight. I have tried to raise this issue with the legislature, I've tried to raise it with the governor, and I've tried to raise it with my state organization of counties. Nobody seems to be willing to fight the lobbyists, which are the construction industry and the school districts, who don't seem to want to have this safeguard. I find that absolutely reprehensible.
The one thing I'd like to ask everyone before I finish an interview is if they have a request for a song or something.
My favorite song would be Richard Farina and Mimi Farina, Pack Up Your Sorrows. I think it's time we need to pack those things up and come out with some new things that take us to a place of love and peace, not places of war and hate.